This is syndicatednews.net. Don't forget that Aphrodite Jones, new time slot is 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and 8 p.m. Central on the ID channel.
Good evening, everybody, and thank you for joining us. But today, we're going to be joined with True Crime, from True Crime, with Aphrodite Jones. Aphrodite Jones, she's also a New York Times bestseller. She wrote plenty of books. She used to be with Fox News, but now is on the iDay Network. Ladies and gentlemen, here is, making her return, Aphrodite Jones. Aphrodite, good evening, and welcome to King Jordan Radio.
Thank you, King Jordan. I appreciate you having me on.
Yes, yes. The last time you were on was March. You were getting ready to do some stuff on your new show. Well,
yeah, I was filming season four of my True Crime, which I'm just finishing wrapping up shooting next week, and it's already on the air. It started airing, this is its fourth week now, airing tomorrow night, or Thursday night, rather, at 9 p.m.
Yeah, you know, I saw, I have cable version, it said 5 p.m., and it said it's going to show the episode of the West Memphis 3.
No, those are old episodes they're re-airing. The new season, season four, began on, this is in its fourth week right now, so it just began 4 weeks ago, and so it's already running. I mean, there'll be only 10 episodes left that are airing. So it's a brand new season and a brand new time slot. It's Thursdays at 9 p.m. on the ID Network, ID Channel, Investigation and Discovery.
And, of course, that is Channel 171 in the New York area. And you've been doing that for 4 years, like you said. And tell me how the first two episodes went, or the first couple episodes, first four episodes.
Overall, the ratings have been really good on the show. People seem to be more in touch with the show, if you want me to say. They seem to be more, how do I put it? There seems to be a better flow between what the audience is seeing and what we're presenting. It's definitely an opinionated-driven show. I mean, I'm not hiding my opinion of who did what, but at the same time, there are dramatizations so that there is an element of mystery, which is a very sort of strange act to balance, but somehow the producers have been able to do that. And, the stories that I've been doing have been unusual ones. There's one coming up. This one this week is about a nursing student, an Asian woman, young woman who was killed by her best friend, another young Asian woman. Both of these women are very tiny, petite in stature, and in a million years you would never guess that someone would kill her best friend. But that's exactly what happened, and it was over jealousy, perceived jealousy about a boyfriend, which was ill-conceived jealousy anyway. There was never anything going on. There was never a love triangle. So in this case, it was a case of somebody being too nice, a young woman, a nurse, being too caring and too much of a nurturer to too many people that got her killed, and it took a long time to solve the case. She was a missing person for a very long time, and her family didn't give up hope that she would be found. And it just really was a torture situation in which the killer believed she would get away with it, and almost did.
Yeah, it's amazing what people think. They really think they're invincible sometimes.
Well, many times people do get away with murder. That's the problem. You know, it's not, unfortunately, in real life, these crime stories that I delve into don't always end with a nice tidy bow like on the CSI, you know. There are many unsolved murders across America that I grapple with every day and hope and look and see whether or not there are any action on police work or informants coming forward or tips from public. It's impossible, obviously, for one person to handle it or any given agency to handle it. So many crimes are under the radar, and it's not always easy to pin a crime on someone. Even if you know that person was at the scene, you have to be able to almost put the gun in their hands in order to get a jury to find them guilty. And it's you know, people aren't witnessing guns in someone's hands. If they are, they're dead. So,
absolutely. And I just did want to say, though, that West Memphis 3 episode was amazing. And it's on YouTube, and I saw it live, though. That was an amazing episode. How did you feel about that one?
Well, you know, what was great about doing that story is that is a story of three young men who were imprisoned in Memphis. I'm sorry, not Memphis. Arkansas.
Right.
West Memphis, Arkansas, just outside of Memphis. And they were imprisoned because, in essence, they were cocky, and the one young man's name was Damien, and there was rumors floating around that they were into witchcraft and devil worship. And it's a very small little town that a rumor like that goes around like wildfire. And in essence, the police were able to get confessions out of two of the other boys saying that they killed these three young little Cub Scout boys, these teenagers supposedly killed these Cub Scouts, when in fact they didn't. So there were forced confessions or coerced confessions, which
Right. People
don't understand how a young kid or anybody would give a false confession. Why would you confess to something that you did not do? You know,
Right. It's
very difficult to understand it. This is the second story that I've covered in which there are young people that are later exonerated, but 20 years later when their whole life has basically been thrown away because of a false confession. And the other story I did is called The Dixmoor Five. Again, in keeping with the Memphis 3, West Memphis 3, where it's, you know, they, in that case, five young men in south side of Chicago who were somehow lulled into giving, some of whom were given false confessions. And when I spoke to them as adults, when they were exonerated, you know, they told me basically what the same thing that the young men from West Memphis said, which is, you know, I was scared. They told me I could go home if I just, you know, said yes to their questions. You know, if you're 15 years old and you've got a bunch of cops in your face and you don't have a lawyer, you don't know better than to call for a lawyer or your parent, and you have cops feeding you lines telling you after 6 hours of interrogation, you know, and not letting you go to the bathroom or letting you, you know, not letting you have anything to eat, that, you know, you can leave if you just say yes to these statements and sign this piece of paper. And in both these cases, that's what happened. The police actually wrote out the confessions for these young men and young children. They were still young teens, you know, in their late, I would say they were somewhere around 17 and 18 years old.
Right.
And they're confessing to things that, it's impossible. I mean, it's impossible to believe that this goes on in America, but it does, and it goes on. There are other cases like this that I'm still researching into that, and the Innocence Project is very much a part of,
Yes. Trying
to, you know, unravel the truth, because when a town and a mentality gets across a certain, you know, the public, between the local media, the townsfolk, and, of course, the elected officials, and they determine that they need to have a culprit for a horrible crime, that often can turn into finding people guilty who are not guilty to make the, quote, problem go away.
Right.
And it has happened, you know, obviously we see these reverse exonerations and false imprisonments now with DNA available much more often. But think about young kids whose lives have been destroyed. I mean, they've spent the better part of their life behind bars for something they did not do.
Yes. It's really crazy what goes on. It really is.
I mean, it's and luckily with between all the celebrities that happened to get involved in trying to free the West Memphis Three, Johnny Depp was involved and the Dixie Chick and all kinds of people, and shows like mine and others, there were HBO documentaries on the subject. All of that media light forced something unusual in the state of Arkansas, which was the first ever, not eradication of the conviction, but releasing those three young men from prison under the condition that they never talk about or come back to the state for any other kind of compensation. So in other words, they can't go to the state like other people who are falsely imprisoned and then they get truly exonerated and then they can come back and say, you know, okay, now you owe me $500,000 for taking 20 years of my life. They didn't do that in Arkansas.
No, they didn't.
But they did get released since the time that I, you know, had done my show on this case. And the fact that they were released at all was nothing short of a miracle because it came to this Arkansas Supreme Court to make that decision. And it was a close call because the prosecution was still adamant that they had the three right killers and that those three young men from West Memphis had killed these boys and confessed to it, and they wanted those boys to remain in prison forever. And, you know, but for the grace of God, somehow someone in the upper levels of the Supreme Court in that state saw to it that they at least received their freedom.
Absolutely. It's a tough set of circumstances. And as we are right now sitting, there are hundreds of people, innocent people, that are sitting in prisons. And hopefully the Innocent Projects helps you know, because that's just one, that's a group of three, but there's a lot more out there, Aphrodite. You would agree, right?
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt about it. But, you know, the other side of that equation, of course, Jordan, is that what happens invariably is that every single person I meet behind prison walls says they're innocent.
Of course. So,
pretty much. I would say there's a 1.1% that doesn't. So
right.
Out of all the people I've met behind prison walls and have gotten letters from and have dealt with for 25 years now, there hasn't been, other than one that I've dealt with, anybody who has said that they're guilty. So, you know, with these DNA results and with those instances where we're talking about people who are falsely imprisoned because they gave false confessions or they were pressured or coerced into confessions or whatever the case may be, you know, that really is not the rule. Let's be clear, because this world seems to be upside down these days. That's the exception rather than the rule, you know. Most people who are behind prison got there because they committed the crime and it was proven in a court. Yes, there are many innocent people of the countless people in prisons. However, the majority, the vast percentage of people in prison, 95% or more, I'm being generous by saying 95%, I would go even higher, I'd say 98%, but, you know, maybe there's 2% in there that are falsely and unjustly in for criminal acts like murder. I'm not talking about other things. I'm only speaking to murder now. I can't speak to, you know, anybody who got put in there because of a drug charge or, you know, a rape charge or anything like that. But just when I'm talking about just murder, where it's those stakes are that high and people are facing lifetimes behind bars, that doesn't just happen by willy-nilly. That happens with a very difficult, and 12 jurors and all the rest of it that goes along with it. And so that's why I say it's a high percentage of people who truly are in there because they committed the crime. And you know, I hate to have our listeners think, oh, my God, there's so many people now behind prison, you know, walls that don't belong there. Not for murder anyway, no.
Right. Okay,
yeah.
I just want to let the callers that are holding, I see plenty. We will get to you, and which brings me to the Michael Jackson book, one of many books that you wrote, and people got to remember that you wrote this 2 years before he died. We got a lot of new listeners since the last time. Can you give us a little update about the book?
Sure. I actually updated the book in this last year and included,
really?
For the first time, an e-version of the book, and also in the update, I actually addressed Michael's death and the issue of Conrad Murray's trial. To a very limited extent, I might add, only because I ultimately felt when I wrote that section of the book, I actually am privy to and actually have copies of Michael Jackson's medical records, specifically the records regarding his visits as under the name Omar Arnold.
Right.
And we've now been able to prove that that is, in fact, Michael Jackson going to see his dermatologist, his famous dermatologist. And so I have those records. And the more I studied his medical records, the more I looked at his life in those last months. And then, of course, being at the trial and seeing Conrad Murray and the family and living through that nightmare and then dealing with what the defense was trying to do in diverting the perceptions of Conrad Murray being this wonderful man who was trying to help Michael. I just got to a point where I finally decided that I would not want anyone to reveal my medical records to the world. And Michael Jackson's whole life was public, and I am not going to take part in revealing anything more about him than already is out there. So this is why the update in my book is very brief. It does cover all of those particular territories, however, and give some light to what went on there. But at the end of the day, I truly believe that you know, Conrad Murray is going to have to look over his shoulder for the rest of his life. Michael Jackson has...
You don't think that, nor does his lawyer. She just said there's a few wacky fans out there. Valerie,
yeah.
Watts, I'm sure you saw that interview, and
mm-hmm.
she makes something out of it, and he's got a lot of fans, Michael.
Well, that's what I'm saying. And look, I just released that book in Russian recently. It's going to be coming out in Russia, I think, within the next 2 weeks. That book is now in you know, released in almost every language around the world.
Wow.
And you know, it continues to sell throughout the world. In fact, you know, originally the publisher that had it when Michael died had pushed the price up to $31.99, and I was able to get ownership of it myself, and I cut the price in half so that people can get it on Amazon for, I think, $15, or they can download it for less, because Michael's fans do want to know the truth about what went on at that trial in Santa Maria, and I did show them and prove what was absolutely undisputable in that courtroom, which is that the media had it out for Michael and that they did not report what was really happening inside the courtroom. They twisted and turned everything that was positive about Michael Jackson and only reported salacious allegations to the public to try to convince the public that Michael was not only guilty, but would be found guilty. And when he was found not guilty, which I interviewed those jurors and the jury foreman, they were very clear that they did not believe the accusers in any way, shape, and form. This was not a question of them being starstruck. This was not a question of them being interested in book deals or anything else. In fact, had they convicted Michael Jackson, they would have gotten book deals. They did their duty. They absolutely did what they needed to do, which was look at the evidence and see that the prosecution in Santa Barbara, Santa Maria, was absolutely grasping at straws, using a family of vagabonds who had gone after every celebrity, including Jay Leno, Chris Tucker, George Lopez, and on until they got to the biggest mark of all, Michael Jackson. And that was testified to by all of those stars in the courtroom. I document it in the book. I write about it extensively in the book from the court transcripts.
This is syndicatednews.net. Don't forget that Aphrodite Jones, new time slot is 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and 8 p.m. Central on the ID channel.
So I'm not making it up. I was there every day of the trial. I sat there. I watched it. I met Michael. I talked to Michael. I saw the fans. I lived through it. And believe me, that experience is something that will never happen again and should never have happened.
No, it must be tough for MJ every day to just know.
And it will never happen to anyone again, because nobody is as big of a mark as Michael Jackson was. Nobody had the heart that Michael Jackson did, or has the heart, I should say, to do as much as he did for so many children and for so many others. And opening up his home to Martin Bashir was one of the biggest mistakes Michael Jackson ever made. And it was that, opening up his home to somebody who was an unknown filmmaker from Britain, that
got the ball
ultimately
rolling.
Excuse me?
That got the ball rolling.
Yeah, that got the ball rolling. That was the first, do you know that that was the first thing that the jury saw? We actually sat in court and watched the documentary, the Bashir documentary, in court. And then that, the first witness called was Martin Bashir.
Yeah.
And you know, Martin Bashir refused to answer any questions and invoked his amendment rights as a journalist not to have to answer questions. Meanwhile, you know, fortunately, Michael had his own videographer available and was taping things at the same time, and that outtake footage also came into court later in the defense part of the trial, and then the jury saw the real Martin Bashir, and then the jury saw the real Michael Jackson, which is what really, I believe, swayed them more than anything else. Because the truth was, Michael was helping a kid who had cancer. And the kid, he was wheeling the kid around who had radiation treatments and no hair on his head and was helping this kid with cancer. And this is the kid that Michael allegedly molested, molested him not at the time of the Bashir documentary, but after the Bashir documentary aired. So in other words, after the whole world is now looking at Michael Jackson with a microscope and the whole world is calling CBS and CNN and news organizations from the world are calling to see what's going on with Michael Jackson and this, quote, boy that he's holding hands with in his bed. And at that point, that's when Michael Jackson's going to decide to molest this kid?
It's very crazy indeed. Set of circumstances.
But what's more crazy to me, Jordan, is the fact that people that are not interested in Michael Jackson or concerned about the truth actually don't even want to think about it. They don't care.
No, they have a certain way. And some people, you could show like a videotape of a confession, and they still think Michael Jackson was a pedophile.
Well, here's the thing. First of all, one of the things that swayed jurors more than anything was the videotape of the boy being interviewed by the Santa Barbara police. And there you see the boy being questioned about whether or not he was molested, and he can't remember, but when he does remember, he says he was molested a number of 4 or 5 times. Then, on the witness stand, he says he was molested 1 or 2 times. Well, which one was it? I mean, you can't remember?
And he said his grandmother told him to do one sexual act, and then Michael told him to do it, and he changed it to Michael, what his grandmother told him, a form of masturbation. If you remember
right.
that.
I mean, the whole thing is it was so convoluted, and his brother and sister had different testimony than he did, and his mother had yet other testimony. None of their testimony added up, and bottom line was that they were actors. They were trained in acting. They had already lied in a previous lawsuit against JCPenney, you know, in which they were able to, you know, it was proven that they had lied under oath in their sworn depositions. I mean, it just goes on and on. But now, I will say that for people who argue that Michael Jackson was a pedophile and don't want to even read the book or think about who Michael Jackson was, I will say I am not willing, as the author of the book that I wrote, to say I 100% know anything about Michael Jackson's life, to say what it was he did, for instance, with Jordy Chandler. I have my own questions there. But I do believe, without a shadow of a doubt, that the trial in Santa Maria was a payback for what didn't happen when the prosecutor wanted to go after Michael Jackson about Jordy Chandler and said there was a settlement, and that the trial that happened in Santa Maria was an outcoming from Michael trying to do damage control and show people that all he had done in the rest of his life was help his own children and other children. And Martin Bashir got him to believe that he would be able to show the world what he was doing to help children. He wanted the world to know he was a good person, which he was. And it all backfired on him because somehow Bashir and the people, the grifters, were able to twist this into another allegation charge and trial. And I believe that that whole situation ultimately wound up killing Michael because it killed his spirit. He left the
yes.
United States, and he was a nomad for so many years after that. And you talk about the drugs that he used and the state he was in. He just had nowhere to live or where to be after that. And
okay.
Very sad.
Let's go to Cole, if that's okay with you.
Sure.
This is syndicatednews.net. Don't forget that Aphrodite Jones' new time slot is 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and 8 p.m. Central on the ID channel.
Please state your name. You're live.
I'm David.
Hi, David.
Hi, David.
What are you calling? I have a question. A few minutes ago, you say that you have your own questions about Jordan Chandler's accusation against Michael Jackson. I was wondering, do you have any doubts about Michael Jackson's innocence in 1993, and if so, why?
Do I have any doubts about his innocence in 1993? Yes. If so, why? Why? Because I watched the testimony of June Chandler in the court in Santa Maria, Jordy's mother. And I was, how shall I put it, unnerved by what she was saying. She was talking about Michael staying in the hotel room with Jordy, about Michael sleeping over her house with Jordy, about Michael crying if he couldn't stay in the same room with Jordy. This was all part of testimony at the trial. It was very unnerving, and I felt like he was in love with that boy, and whether or not there was anything more to it, obviously we'll never know, but everything that his mother was testifying to when I was reading between the lines made me very uncomfortable.
Okay. Well, other than the fact that you feel uncomfortable, do you have any other reasons to have any doubts?
That's a huge reason, honey bunny. There couldn't be a bigger reason. I sat inches away, feet away from Jordy Chandler's mother and watched her testify for hours and hours on end. And everything about her made me feel like she was a woman who was looking the other way. everything about what she said. Now, does that mean that I think that Michael really did anything? I don't know. That's all I'm saying. But I'm not willing to say he didn't, or that I feel that, certainly not that I feel he didn't, because I don't know. But I will say I was shaken by June Chandler's testimony.
Just out of curiosity, have you read any of the books I read about in 1993, for instance, Redemption by Zora Neale Hurston, or The King of Pop's Darkest Hour by Mary Campbell?
I have met Geraldine Hughes many times. I have those books. I'm aware of them. But, again, I'm not here to debate what happened in 1993. Michael is dead. I don't really know what happened. None of us, I don't think, will ever know what happened. I think that will die with Geordi and his father who killed himself and the rest of that family. Who do not know anything? I don't know. But I will say, again, only this. I am adamant that Michael Jackson was innocent of any and all charges in 2005 in Santa Maria, the only trial he ever faced. People are confused and think that Michael Jackson faced two trials. No, he never faced any other trial. He faced one trial in his life. And that was in 2005 in Santa Maria, and that was a trumped-up garbage trial with vagabonds who were out for blood and money, blood money. And Michael was only there to help those people. And that is the absolute truth. Now, anything beyond that, I can't swear to, but I can certainly swear to that because I sat there and listened to it and witnessed it for 5 months. So,
do you have any thoughts on Jason Francia? Do you believe Michael was innocent of abusing Jason Francia? Because he also testified.
I think that all the boys who testified, I didn't believe any of them who were allegedly tickled or touched or this or that or traumatized by Michael. I did not believe them.
Okay. And what are your thoughts on Wade Robeson?
Excuse me?
What are your thoughts on Wade Robeson? He testified for Michael 2005. Now, earlier this year, he said he was abused.
Yeah. Well, there are some very interesting little birds that have spoken into my ears about the possibilities that Mr. Robeson may have been influenced by the powers at a place such as AEG as one possibility. Somebody who, or some company who might have had a reason to dirty up or smear the name of Michael Jackson in the midst of other litigation. I can't say there's any truth to it, but I think the timing is curious that just as the trial of AEG is raging on and Katherine Jackson is suing them for having hired Conrad Murray, all of a sudden, at the same time, Wade Robeson, who has a career that's come to a stall, who needs money, is suddenly out with claims and molestations when he was the star witness for the defense. I find that extremely odd timing, and I wonder about what I have heard from, you know, various sources as to why that timing, why now.
Yeah, it's very curious, especially with the video in 2009 and 2010, all kinds of videos. He had to go under oath twice. Tom was on this show, and he told me. So it's very curious, very curious, the whole Wade Robeson situation. Let's go over to 787. It's your turn. Please state your name.
Hi, I'm Daniel.
Hi, Daniel.
Hey, where are you calling from, Daniel?
Hi. I'm calling from Puerto Rico.
Oh.
How you doing?
Hey. I just want to say it's an honor to speak to you. I really admire your work. Now, my question is, you said you were in the courtroom every day during the trial. Now, that means you must have been there when Ray Robson testified.
Yes.
Now, do you recall his demeanor, the way he spoke? Did he show any kind of reservations or any kind of hesitation, or was he clear and adamant? And
he was adamant. He was adamant that nothing happened to him. But I will say that I reread his testimony, because when he first came out with these new allegations, and in looking at his testimony and reading between the lines, part of me felt like he was maybe being too adamant, that maybe there was something to what he was saying later. But that's going inside the envelope, beyond the envelope, you know what I mean? It's reading so far, it's overanalyzing it to the point that I don't know what to do with that. But on the surface, he was adamant that nothing happened, and that is clear in the testimony that I read and in what I saw in court. So the only way to say that maybe there's a glitch there is to say, at some point, as I was rereading the testimony more recently this year, I thought, wow, he's almost too adamant. Like, he's too quick to say no. that was what occurred to me. I thought, gee, you know, maybe he's, you know, there have been allegations that, you know, he was on the payroll, not the payroll, but, you know, he had been given some jobs to do, was in the videos with Michael, and that he was hoping for, to be in the Cirque du Soleil production about Michael Jackson, and then when that fell through, suddenly he came through with these allegations. So that's another theory as to why these allegations came forward now. Whatever the case may be, clearly he somehow was riding a wave. As long as Michael was alive, he felt he had the potential to, you know, do another video, be in something, you know, ride Michael's coattails. Once Michael died, now he had nowhere to turn, especially when he didn't make it into the Cirque du Soleil production. And, you know, So that is another, you know, issue, a big issue with the whole Wade Robson revelations,
Speaking of the Cirque du Soleil, that's also interesting to point out, because in his lawsuit, he's also claiming that the estate should have notified him that he should have filed a creditor's claim or something, and he's saying something to the effect that he wasn't aware of the existence of the estate, and yet he was trying to get involved on that Cirque du Soleil project. And then in 2009, he wrote a passage in the Michael Jackson opus. And
this is syndicatednews.net. Don't forget that Aphrodite Jones, new time slot is 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and 8 p.m. Central on the ID channel.
Hello?
Okay, I think we lost him. I think he was trying to say that Wade wrote something in the Michael Jackson passage. Are you there?
No, he's not there.
Okay.
I will answer. Hopefully he can still hear us. Wade Robson is, in my opinion, somebody who's...
Registers after him and the FBI. You had all these people because they... All these parties investigated Michael for years, from 1993, the years in between, until 2003 and the 2005 case. So I find it very implausible. That's just my opinion.
I'm sorry, we lost you for part of what you were saying. So between the time you started talking about Robson and writing in the opus and then picking back up again when you said the FBI and everybody investigated Michael for years, which I'm aware of, what did you find implausible? What Wade Robson is saying now?
Yes, because he's trying to say that he was molested from the age of 7 to 14. So that would include the early 90s, which is when Michael was being investigated for the Jordan Chandler case.
Right.
Now, it's the same thing as with the Bashir thing, when Gavin said that he was molested after the Bashir interview.
Right.
Why wouldn't Michael molest Wade when he's already being scrutinized and investigated for the Jordan Chandler case?
I agree with you. I feel like the Wade Robson allegations sink to high heaven. I just think it's all about the money. It's all about the money right now. He's grasping at straws. He's desperate because he's lost his lifeline to the Jackson money, and that's why he's daring to go after the estate. Is he kidding?
I also understand that, you know, I don't know if it's true or not, but there are rumors that he had drug problems of some sort and that contributed to his career going stale. And I also hear that he might, I don't know if this is a fact, but I have heard that his son is autistic, and I do know that it costs very much to care for an autistic child.
Here's the thing. Is your name Daniel?
Yes.
Daniel, is at the end of the day, it's expensive to live no matter what your circumstances are for all of us. Life is a struggle. And especially, though, when you are a young star, like Wade Robeson, who was picked up by a superstar and made into a mini star, okay, and enjoyed the luxuries of that lifestyle at a young age. You don't ever forget that. And you spend the rest of your life, that's why child stars often, you know, wind up extinguishing themselves or unable to grapple with adulthood because they don't know what to do. They can never live up to what they had. And in his case, that certainly seems to be the case. So whatever his troubles are, his struggles are financially in adulthood, are just compounded by the reality that at the end of the day, he wanted to be up there on a pedestal with Michael Jackson. And as long as Michael was alive, he always felt he could access that somehow. And with Michael's death, you know, there at some point became a realization that Michael was really dead, and Michael is gone. And now suddenly we get these allegations. And I don't think that it's a coincidence. I think it's him hitting a wall and realizing that his meal ticket to the stratosphere ended forever. And now he's going to grasp at whatever he can take.
Yes, I completely agree with you. And it's also interesting that he waited 4 years to come out with this now, whereas if you look, have you heard about the Jimmy Savile situation?
No.
Well, he was, I honestly don't know much about it, but he was a very famous personality in Britain, a DJ, a radio host. I can't remember for sure what his official profession was, but he passed away, I believe, in 2010 or 2011, and almost immediately after, many people came out to say that he had molested them, boys, girls, and, you know.
Oh, yes, I know you're talking about. I know what you're talking about now. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and when Michael died, you didn't see any of that.
Well,
that's
something that supporters and readers of my book have pointed out to me over the course of time is that, you know, there is definitely when somebody is truly a molester, you know, you will see evidence of that, and you will see many people come out because it's a lifetime thing and you can't stop yourself. It's like this creep that was molesting these young girls in Cleveland, Ohio, and he ultimately killed himself by virtue of some kind of autoerotic asphyxiation, I believe now they think it was, in prison. He couldn't stop himself or help himself from that behavior, even in prison. So, you know, and there's more people that are in the background of the woodwork of that thing, as I understand it, that he was either after or who got away or whatever. So, yeah, I think that, you know, if in fact Michael Jackson was a true child molester, we would have seen evidence and proof of this by more than just, you know, a group of vagabonds and the Jordy Chandler, you know, question mark. Which speaks to the innocence of Michael Jackson, speaks to looking at all the good that Michael Jackson did for this world and looking at all the happiness that his music continues to provide for this world all across the globe. And that is something that he and only he was able to do. He was able to transcend every nation, race, color, creed on earth. I don't know anyone else who's crossed all those lines.
Nobody. Let's go to 706. It's your turn. Please state your name.
Hello, this is Sharon. Good evening.
Hi, Sharon.
Hi. Two things. First of all, you were talking about the Innocence Project and people who, or young people, old people, who end up giving false confessions.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to touch on this because there is a video on YouTube. A man spent 15 years in jail for rape. And the police finally, or the group found out it was a false confession. But to this day, the woman, they actually found the man who did rape her. But
mm-hmm.
to this day, it is embedded in her memory that this guy did it. And although he's out of prison, he didn't get compensation like I thought he should have for
mm-hmm.
false imprisonment. But she still, when she thinks of her rapist, she sees this man.
Mm-hmm.
And but for 15 years, because the police did not do due diligence,
right?
He had 15 years to continue to rape. So you had the innocent man in jail
mm-hmm.
while the guilty was let free. And, of course, this is what happens in these kind of cases when you get
mm-hmm.
the wrong person that goes to jail.
Right.
Okay. In reference to Michael Jackson and Wade Robeson.
Let me just address what you just said. I want to say one thing about that.
Sure, go ahead.
And that is there are numerous times in the work that I do and in my series True Crime that airs, you'll see that I have cases in which a murder is not solved for 20-something years. I mean, they come up every now and again in the series, in this current season as well. And so, of course, you realize then that means that all the time that the murderer was out there when they didn't solve the case, that we don't know where, if and where there are hidden bodies or what the person was doing all those years before they got caught. And so it's a common denominator of when police don't do their due diligence, as you say, when the police work is either shoddy or quick to judge. There's a football player, Steve McNair. I'm going to have an episode on him that's going to be airing in a few weeks. Steve McNair was the Titans quarterback, a hero, a legend to Nashville, Tennessee. He was murdered allegedly by his mistress in a murder-suicide, but there is enough evidence to suggest that this young girl who never handled a gun in her life did not murder and shoot execution style the big huge quarterback Steve McNair, who was three times her size. It didn't happen that way, but yet the Nashville police closed the case down, said that's what happened, and left it at that. So if in fact they're wrong, which there's plenty of evidence that we show to say that they were too quick to rush to judgment, then the killers or killers are still out there doing whatever it was that they did and are continuing to do. So this is something that, we do grapple with as a society, and we do pay for it as a society as well. You know, when justice is not served, it isn't just to the family or the victim. It is also to us as a society, because we are all living with those criminals that are monsters that are now even more empowered by having gotten away with murder or rape or whatever the case may be out on the streets. And it's a cycle that, unfortunately, because of human error, we can't break. We can only do the best we can and hopefully fight for justice to prevail and truth to be told.
This is syndicatednews.net. Don't forget that Aphrodite Jones, new time slot is 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and 8 p.m. Central on the ID Channel.
Does that make sense?
It makes sense. And I understand that we're human, we're flawed. There are many reasons besides seeking justice that people can go to jail for, and there are many reasons that people commit crimes. So I understand that, yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a perfect system. It's never going to be a perfect system. But
no.
At the end of the day, I personally believe in karma. I believe in God, and I believe in truth. And so I think that no matter what, you don't ever get off this planet without paying for your crimes. And I don't think you ever get away with it, ever, all the way around, ever, because I think you have to live with whatever your sins are day in and day out. So that's just me. That doesn't mean that's really what it is, but that is what I live by, and I will always live by that because I experience it myself. So, you know, does that change the fact that there's murderers running around that haven't been caught? No, it doesn't change it. But do I think that eventually they pay and we'll get caught? I believe that in my heart of hearts, you know. So, again, we can't solve all the violence in the world. We certainly can't solve it even in our country. Forget about the world. So, you know, we do what we can.
Okay. Makes
so
sense.
You were going to ask about Michael?
Yes. Wade Robeson.
Yes.
I take issue with a lot of things that have been said by Mr. Robeson and by some of the media who I have not yet seen a proper interview with an investigative journalist and Wade Robeson. What I've seen is him giving platform.
Right. I agree with you.
And like I said, I take issue to this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because if you're going to wear the hat, then let's do the job. That thing that was done on NBC was an absolute travesty. Okay?
Well, here's the thing. Is I agree with you, and I'll tell you why. This happens, and I'm sure you already know this, but I'm going to say it just because I think people are thinking it, which is in order to get somebody like that to come out with whatever it is they're going to say that's salacious, there are promises that are probably made, okay, and conditions that are laid out in advance, and those promises have to do with softballing an interview, if you will. And I'm not saying that's what happened because I'm not there, I'm not producing that show, and I'm not on that scene. But I can only say that I believe that even if it's not promised, it's implied that we're going to give you a platform. We're not going to, you know, we're not going to make you uncomfortable. We're not going to make this, you know, any more difficult for you than it is. We just want to hear you come forward with the truth. I can imagine that being a conversation. And I can imagine, rather than anybody going in for hard questioning, wanting to have further contact with him, further interviews down the road that will bring ratings, and therefore not wanting to put any hard questions to him.
And that's fine. I mean, that's the nature of the beast, especially with the television market. However, you have this man who gives a statement to his attorney. His attorney, in turn, prepares this complaint, not statement, complaint,
mm-hmm.
gives it to the court. He comes on television. No, somebody leaked it to TMZ. Suddenly, there are people of repute who are saying, I'm not so sure about the repressed memory thing.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. So now we come on television and we say, no, it was never repressed memory. Well, where did your attorney get this from? Okay, I doubt seriously if he filed this complaint and then just put down whatever he wants to, because that would be illegal. Okay?
Right. It is.
It would be illegal. Okay, because you're saying that this is what my client told me, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, it certainly, and I, of course, who didn't notice that, that's following this, that at first it was repressed memory, and,
right.
and then when nobody bought repressed memory, suddenly it changed to, oh, no, I remember it.
I remember it, but I don't remember any of the details.
Yeah.
And then it got even worse as the, in the middle or the very beginning of the AEG wrongful death trial. We have an interview where this man claims his father committed suicide because of the molestation. But you told us nobody knew about these allegations until what, 2010, 11, 12? Your father died in 2002.
Mm.
So you've not only slandered, you for sure have slandered your father. You've dishonored his name and everything that he ever was, right?
I think, you know, you hit the nail on the head, and that is that there's nothing to be believed out of this person's mouth because he's talking out of both sides of his mouth, and his story changes with whatever is convenient for him in the moment because it's all about him trying to grab at Michael Jackson's estate and money. I mean, I don't know how else more plainly to say it other than if he was a child who was molested, why in the world would he be the first witness to testify on the behalf of the defense to tell everybody in the world, myself included, that he and Michael were friends forever? And I have, by the way, copies of his handwritten letters from him and his family to Michael written in the Neverland Valley Ranch book, guest book. I have them myself in my possession, the copies of those letters, those notes written in the book by the Robeson family, by Wade, saying how much they love him, how much they're happy to be there, how much she's provided for them in their lives, how much joy he's given them. I have them. I mean, I didn't publish them in the Michael Jackson conspiracy book because it wasn't pertinent at the time to the story at hand. But you know, so I forgot about them actually. But now that you're saying this to me, it's reminding me that, you know, and there are so many people that thanked the Brandos, thanked Michael, and Jessica Simpson thanked Michael, and Tommy Hilfiger thanked Michael, and I have all those things. I made copies of them when I was going through the evidence. Back when I had my hands on those things that now went back to the estate. But of them was the Robesons. I have them. I remember it so specifically now. So what the hell is this person talking about? I don't get it. I mean, other than being for the money, what could
and,
it be?
You got to think when Tom is calling him Aphrodite and all this is going on, don't you think Mike would have said to Tom, you know, if this happened, don't call Wade, you know, I'm not too sure about this, you know.
Well, first of all, let me tell you, I've spent many a day with Tom Mesereau, interviewing him for my shows, interviewing him for the book. You know, we have a professional friendship over the years, and I can tell you that never once has Tom Mesereau wavered in any way, shape, and form that Michael ever said to him in any way, shape, or form that he ever did anything to any child, that there was any child that he was concerned about or curious about or worried about. That never happened. And Mesereau is crafty. If anything like that
yes.
had happened, he would find a way to phrase something to me that I would understand that there's maybe something
right.
to hide. He has never been anything but adamant about Michael's complete and utter innocence. And that speaks volumes because Tom Mesereau is a man of integrity beyond reproach. That's how I feel about him. That's what I've learned him to be. And I will tell you that that's how he felt about Michael and still feels about Michael, and to his dying day, I know will go to his grave knowing that he did the right thing by Michael. So, you know, I mean, the fact that Wade Robeson is the first star witness for the defense, it belies any credibility that now he's coming out with this stuff. It's just, it's,
It's very odd indeed.
This is syndicatednews.net. Don't forget that Aphrodite Jones, new time slot is 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and 8 p.m. Central on the ID channel.
It's sad. You know, it's sad. Because, once again, Michael has to be dragged through the mud by somebody when he is, you know, in heaven and gone, and his music still lives on to please and amuse all of us and literally thrill us and give us glee and joy every time we hear. I mean, I don't go, there's nowhere I go in a store or in a mall or in a party where I don't hear a Michael Jackson song. It doesn't happen. It's just, he's part of our lives. His music will live forever. And for people to come forward when he's gone and off this earth and bring forth this salacious crap is just, I find it despicable.
Totally. And thank you for the call, Sharon. I think we got California. You're next.
Okay, I got to tell you, King Jordan, I've got 10 more minutes.
Okay, get that out of the way. California, Mark, I think this is.
Yes, it's me. It's Mark.
Hi, Mark.
Okay.
Hello. According to this Pearl woman, Michael Jackson is still alive.
I know Pearl.
Okay.
She covered the trial with me there in Santa Maria, and I actually interviewed her for one of my shows on true crime with my Investigation Discovery show. She was on.
So I did
an hour on Michael Jackson on my first season. I don't know if you saw it.
Does she hold any credibility by saying that Michael Jackson is still alive?
Not in my opinion. I was at Michael Jackson's memorial service. I covered it for Fox News.
Okay, but according to her, then this Dr. Murray should be... Was sent to jail for no apparent reason.
Well, you know, Mark, I love the question, and I believe you're being facetious, right?
I'm not even sure.
Are you really not sure?
No, Aphrodite, that's a lot.
I haven't heard it. Even on this King Jordan show here, everything is like sensationalized. You know, I know you got your elevators goes all the way to the top, but. No.
We're not sensational. What are we sensationalizing?
That he's still alive, that he could be still alive.
I never said that.
Not you, but Pearl.
No, but you're saying on the show everything's sensationalized. What have we been sensationalizing?
No, not you per se, not the show, but when she was on, I've heard
oh,
her
when
on,
she was on the show. I'm sorry. Okay.
She's on many times.
I see. Oh, I didn't know that. Okay. Well, let me set the record straight about Pearl and others, because as I said, my book has been translated into languages across the world, and one of those places is Italy. And I went to Milan, where there was a conference of Michael Jackson fans. I would say it was a year after his death, something like that. I'm pretty sure it was 2010. At that time, you know, it was a pretty good conference. There were a lot of fans there. And actually, the other author was there as well that wrote the other Pearl Jackson book. What is her name again?
From which year?
The one we were just talking about her a minute ago. The caller, I can't remember her name at the moment.
Pearl?
No, the author. Oh. The author of the other... Of about the 1993...
Mary Fisher?
No. Anyway. There were a number of people there. I was one of the speakers there. I was the main speaker there, whatever. It was a big to-do in Italy. Now, what happened? It turns out the promoter of the whole event... who had been dealing with me, who was from Switzerland, who had come there to promote this whole event with all these hundreds of people paying all this money to come to this place in Milan to do this whole weekend about Michael Jackson, actually believed that Michael was still alive and that this was a hoax. And she came to me in a quiet moment and asked me to confess to her and to wanted me to, to somehow, confess or provide some kind of counseling to her or to give her some kind of leg to stand on that what she believed, that he was alive and that this was a hoax and it was a publicity stunt, was true.
So
she wanted me to confirm
help,
this to her because I had been in
help.
L.A. And, I was outside the UCLA Medical Center when Michael was in there and had been pronounced dead. I interviewed Frank DeLeo, his manager, that was on my first show, my first season of True Crime, who was in the room with Michael when the plugs were pulled and had to tell Prince in Paris and Catherine that Michael was dead. I was there. I covered the memorial service. I was there, when Tom Mesro came back from the funeral service to tell me how sad it was. I mean, I was a part of it. What in the world were these people telling me? I just couldn't imagine people really, truly wanting to believe or believing that he was not dead, that he would do this to his children. Never. Never.
That's what the question I proposed to that Pearl woman, and she obviously goes the other way on that.
Well, as I say, I know Pearl. I knew Pearl, and she's a lovely woman. She was at the trial. She's a huge Michael Jackson fan. I get that. She told me she was writing a book. When I saw the subject of the book, however, I thought basically she's lost her mind. If she's serious.
Really? That's what I'm trying to figure out.
In my opinion, she's either lost touch with reality, or she's trying to create something spectacular, some kind of, sensationalism. And I don't think that's her. I think she actually believes it, but I don't know how she can believe it. How can you, you really believe that Michael, who loved his children more than life itself, would leave them, would let his son Blanket stand there on a stage with that big tear rolling down his face? Do you really think that he would do that?
Well, that's what I would say.
Her theory was that they were in on it, and a lot of people are in on it,
And they're in on it, and they're by themselves, and Paris tried to kill herself because she's so upset. No, come on.
Yeah, it's insane.
What this reminds me of? It reminds me of the theory that people have that there are people, I think, in Iraq or somewhere who say that the Americans attacked themselves on 9/11.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that believe 9/11 was, part of some conspiracy done by the Americans.
Yeah, and you know what I say to that? They have lost their marbles, those people. That's what I say to those people. I mean, talk about loony people. That is just going into not in touch with reality. We spend our country, we send our blood of our youngest and bravest soldiers. My dad was a military career man, off to wars to fight for our freedom and our stability, and we're going to attack ourselves.
Okay,
it's just unfathomable that people want to think these kind of things, but I can understand it in the world of Michael Jackson because people, just like Elvis lives for many Elvis fans for many years. Tupac, exactly. Even more so with Michael, there are people who just don't want to give him up, and they would rather believe that, like victims in my crime stories were, and they're not stories, they're real stories. That's why the show is called True Crime. Those victims that I do shows about, they truly believe that their loved one didn't kill somebody or that their sister couldn't have killed her husband or that, their daughter couldn't have done this. It didn't happen. It just didn't. It didn't. It wasn't. When really everything shows that it was. And they convince themselves of otherwise because they can't live with it any other way.
Yeah, I mean, you got 3 trials, I think there were. I mean, you got police. You got so many people that would have to be in on it. even if...
Everybody in the Conrad Murray trial are all in on it, and everybody in the AEG trial are all in on it. I mean, it's insanity. It's complete lunacy.
Okay, I got to ask you, though, before we go, now, in regards to the 93 person, you're not saying he's guilty. You're just not vindicating him on that particular subject.
Correct.
Is that correct?
I am not saying he's guilty because I'm not there. I wasn't there. And I don't know that, you know, Frank DeLeo said to me, without a batting an eyelash, that Michael was given bad advice. And I said, what was that advice? And he said, pay him the $20 million because to you it's like a quarter. If you look at my episode on Michael Jackson on True Crime, you'll see that interview. It's in there.
Yes,
if you can get a hold of it, it was from season one. And Frank is dead now and gone. But he was Michael's manager at the time. And he and all the people around Michael, because that was, remember, the height of his career in the 90s. He was at the height of his career. He was the biggest thing on earth.
And he swung the Bible in the Life of an Icon documentary done by David Jess. He swung the Bible that not only Michael was not gay, was never gay, and would confide into Frank that he loved the women.
Well, I saw that documentary, and I have no doubt that happened. I mean, but gay is not what we're talking about here, anyway.
Well,
we're talking about whether or not Michael had something for a child, not gay.
Right.
Being gay never crossed my mind in any way, shape, or form. Look, in my opinion, if Michael was anything, he was asexual. At the end of the day, that is what I personally think. Personally. But
yeah.
I am not willing to go on a limb and talk about what did or did not happen in 1993. None of us were there. I do know that in my mind there's still a question mark, and I have to leave it at that because I have to be true to myself and who I am. You know,
right.
I can't.
What about 2005? You
2005. 2005. He was absolutely a victim of a witch hunt.
So
I prove that in the book that I wrote.
In that documentary, do you think he was trying to show people that this is the guy I am by having a National Children's Day?
Yes. And that's what he wanted. More than anything, he wanted to show the world, look, everything that you might have thought about me or whatever's been going bouncing around about me since the settlement backfired on him, if it was bad advice, which apparently it was,
this is syndicatednews.net. Don't forget that Aphrodite Jones' new time slot is 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and 8 p.m. Central on the ID channel.
Yes.
And they said to him, you know, it's nothing to you. It's like a quarter to you. Just get rid of it, make it go away. Instead, it made it even worse and made it never go away. He ultimately decided, hey, I will do this documentary. I won't take a dime for it. I trust this man, Bashir. We will talk about my International Children's Holiday, which Michael truly believed in. I listened to him many hours on the outtake footage, watched it over and over and over again, where he talked about how children around the world are not being taken care of. And he wasn't talking about American children. He was talking about all those children around the world who are starving and unattended to and don't have clothes and don't have food and don't have anybody, forget it, you know, they don't have anyone to celebrate with. That we have people all over the world, children, who are coming into the world who have no hope and happiness. And Michael was there to want to give them hope and happiness. And that documentary was supposed to be about an international children's holiday that Michael was going to establish. And everything got twisted around on him once again, and entirely, and it broke his spirit because he truly was going to do that International Children's Holiday. I have no doubt about it.
He
was right to want to do that. And by the way, those fans of Michael who are listening, if they want to do anything to please him, it would be to create that holiday in his memory and to actually enact it. We can do that, you know, as his fans.
A very good idea.
Because that's really what he wanted. That was his last wish. That was the wish he had before This Is It and everything came along. That was what he wanted. And it is needed.
This book is so fantastic. How do the fans go about getting it?
I think just go to my website. It's AphroditeJones.com. And you can just click there and get it there. Or you can just go Amazon.com and or just put in Michael Jackson Conspiracy, which is the title, on Google. And it'll come up. And you can just click on it. And
you have the e-book, too?
It's an e-book. It's a paperback book. And it's out in, you know, in every country, pretty much. I mean, except Spanish-speaking countries. I have not been able to get it in any Spanish-speaking country. So I shouldn't say every country. But it's out in China. It's out in Japan. It's out in various forms of Chinese. It's out all throughout Europe, Australia, UK, Canada, Russia. It is in some, it's in Brazil, but that's not Spanish. That's Portuguese. I don't know why it hasn't gone into Spanish. It's been a weird thing with the Spanish. It's
sure.
Weird because there's so many Spanish-speaking countries, but one of these days it'll get into in the Spanish language, I imagine.
Mesereau says here that he was the greatest of all time. Your opinion?
I totally agree. I concur. Without a doubt, Michael Jackson is at the top of my list as one of the greatest people that ever lived for every reason in the world.
Were you a fan of his music?
Absolutely. Not I was. I was, I am, and I always will be.
Oh, okay. Aphrodite Jones will be seen Thursday night at 9 p.m. on the East on the ID Network. And in closing here, the Aaron Hernandez case you've been keeping an eye on, right?
I am keeping an eye on that and also on this bullying situation with the Dolphins.
Yes, what do you think
Dolphins
about that?
Dolphins creep. What's his name? Incognito. He's incognito no more. Because
Candido, yeah.
Incognito.
Right. Absolutely.
He's incognito no more because let me tell you something. This guy is not only going to be fired forever, but he's also going to, this I think is going to become a huge issue in the NFL when they start looking at violence in the NFL. And
people were saying on ESPN and some sports network, hey, the guy's 280 pounds. He could take care of himself. I find that terribly offensive when he's calling them names on his voicemail. You know, maybe he's a guy that, you know, doesn't want confrontations or anything like that. Don't you agree?
It goes beyond that. This guy was threatening to kill. I'll kill you. I'll go after your mother. This goes well beyond. When you're playing in football and that's a teammate that needs to have your back, you could be literally killed or struck so violently if you have a teammate that doesn't have your back that those threats could translate into true harm to this young rookie. And clearly he didn't walk away from a career with the Miami Dolphins because he didn't see this as something very serious. You don't just walk away from a career like that. So this is just the beginning of what's going to become, I think, a huge talking point sociologically for us about violence in the NFL, in the locker room, and the culture of violence, and how it translates into the gun culture that NFL players seem to have brought to the streets as well. All of that is on the horizon for us to grapple with because nobody wants to look that way. They enjoy football, and they don't want to think about anybody being thugs and monsters that are behind those games, but there are, and it needs to stop.
It totally is, and, at least now this will catch attention, and like you said, I hope it comes to fruition. And I got to say, that magazine you were on in the spring, you look like you lost so much weight, and you look wonderful in that magazine.
Oh, thank you. Well, I did lose weight for that, and now I'm back up again. So now when you see me on my show, you're going to say, what happened? She was looking so good.
Yeah, you look.
You're going to say, wait a minute. She's looking so good. What happened? Oh, it's a, you know, the battle of the balls. It's a constant struggle for me.
Sandy hit us. Can you believe that was a year ago?
I can't. And it's, it, you know, I was personally hit by Sandy, so... we're still licking our wounds over here on the south side of Long Island.
Absolutely. Thursdays at 9 p.m., and we'll be looking for that. And you have a lot of other great books. The Lost, what is it? I can't say it.
Cruel Sacrifice. Cruel Sacrifice.
Right.
That's one that people say, listen, King Jordan, I've got to go. It's late for me, and I've got an early call in the morning to get to the studio. But I want to thank you so much for having me on.
Yes, and we want to thank the fans that called in also, and
a lot
of them
great.
To listen. And, again, Thursdays at 9 p.m. on the ID Network. Hopefully we'll have you again sometime soon, Miss Aphrodite.
Okay.
Jones.
Okay, we'll do it. We will
okay.
do it. Maybe after the Steve McNair episode airs, because that'll be in a couple weeks.
When is that?
4 weeks. That's airing the week after Thanksgiving, I believe.
Okay.
Or, no. It's airing the week before Thanksgiving. That's when it's airing. It's airing in 2 weeks. In 2 weeks.
Two weeks.
So perhaps after Thanksgiving, after the Thanksgiving break, because I'll be gone for that, maybe we can do something in December. I'd like that.
Okay. December sounds good. Have a great one.
You too. Thanks.
Okay, and thanks to Miss Aphrodite Jones.
Have you seen my childhood? I'm searching for the world that I come from. 'Cause I've been looking around and lost and found at my heart. No. Thank you. childhood. I'm searching for that wonder in my youth, like